Here we are in the Q Report.
Stands for Quotidian. It's May 31st. We're at Roberta's restaurant.
As we always are. An absolutely splendiferous day.
I'm Patrick Martins.
I'm still Mark Marabella.
And I'm Ed Grant.
Continues to be Ed.
Yes.
And we have one of our best friends sitting in today. We're lucky. Gabe Rosner.
Good afternoon, guys.
Welcome back, Gabe.
Gabe, you're just back from L.A., right?
I was in Los Angeles for a few days last weekend.
While you were gone, there was you guys were blowing up in the press.
Yeah, that actually happened right when I got back. It was pretty exciting, right?
25 and under, that was like a glowing
I'm pretty
review.
Sure they were blowing you up, too.
They were blowing. I don't know if I had anything to do with it.
Or were they
me.
Blown? I don't know which. Is it person?
I think Carlo's cooking, you know, really finally got its due. My mom has been saying Carlo is one of the best chefs in the country for a year now. And
I was really waiting for it. I was really excited when it happened.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, seeing that, I was like, wow.
Everything that had been written previously was always about the pizza. And have something, and we were all waiting for the back kitchen to get the...
Get the props.
It says if you show up during radio, order the guanciale and egg pizza because that's all they have. But whatever you do, come back for dinner. So that's a good way to end it.
It's great because it's everything we've been saying, and now we're justified because it's in print of the times, right?
Oh, of course, man. Yeah, it's not just us rambling in the wilderness.
And we've been validated.
Yeah.
Well, I will say one thing, and this is truly a tribute. It is the first restaurant in the history of the New York Times to be re-reviewed in the 25 and under section.
Wow.
That's any first in the New York Times. Is
I know we're tooting the horn here, Gabe, but I think it's warranted, frankly.
I
really do.
It's really exciting.
I don't think
it's an exciting time.
Nobody has ever been disappointed. I eat here every week. It's always good.
Though my favorite quote was in reference to this. What did he say? He said, "Who needs stone barns when you've got a perfectly good steel box?"
Yeah, baby.
Fierce.
I have obviously tremendous respect for the Rockefellers and Dan Barber. The only thing is, you can't use that as a model for other people to replicate, because the first part of that is you need a Rockefeller donation of a bit of land and money and a stone barn. Sorry, right there. That doesn't work for Brooklyn. So
that eliminates a lot of people.
I have mass props, but that can't be used as the model. Like, this is what you need to do in Nebraska.
Well,
like,
you know.
But what Roberta's obviously, is doing is very carbon copyable.
It's using available resources as they have. The shell, which is quite clearly the case here, is really interesting. And when you come in, you don't expect what you find on the inside. And the shell is completely replaceable by anything else. It's what's inside that matters, obviously.
So when I say people are like, eat some crappy food, I'm like, not in my backyard.
Yeah, no way, man. You don't have to eat crappy food in this backyard.
NIMBY.
But yeah, what we're going to be talking about today is the NIMBY problem.
The NIMBY factor.
Yeah, and it's been in the news a lot lately for something we're not going to talk about except in passing. Shutting down Guantanamo and putting these people into maximum security prisons, which you'd think they could do easily. But everybody, Democrats, Republicans alike, they're all, you know, pinching. Yeah, they're crying like little girls, pinching their sphincters real tight, saying, no, not us.
Not in my backyard.
Yeah.
NIMBY. Yeah.
And it's quite frankly disgusting that our government's doing this. But anyway, what we're going to talk about is more when...
Local?
More local, when good intentions run up against unintended consequences.
Hypocrisy.
Liberal stances versus, wait a minute, that's my view you're blocking.
Right.
I think we'll be talking about environmentalism, the Gowanus Superfund attempt, and also just gentrification in general. Because even us here sitting at Roberta's is... you know, it's a wave of gentrification into a neighborhood that, you know, in other neighborhoods has run into some resistance, like Southside Williamsburg and in Red Hook. So,
but I would say this is an example of utilizing the landscape as it exists, as opposed to you know, putting up 40-story skyscrapers.
Oh, I don't disagree,
yeah.
But you know, I lived in an illegal loft in Red Hook
right.
for 7 years, and you know, the housing project I was near, never a problem.
Right, of course.
But on a residential street, a lot of tension because, you know, whitey like me means higher rents, and then, you know, what comes
right.
after the artists,
right.
the lawyers, and, you know, the uppies.
Right.
So,
right.
you know, it's not a one-sided issue. It's very complicated.
Well, also on the show, I was going to say, regarding hypocrisy, we're going to have Jake Beasley later on, who is somebody who...
A true hypocrite.
Yeah, somebody who's taken it upon himself to do something without waiting for somebody else to do it. So
how dare you?
Yes,
is exactly. What NIMBY people would say.
He's DIY all the way, do it yourself.
Nice, yep. And this is a do-it-yourself.
And we will have an IMBY segment also.
In
my backyard.
Yeah, that's right.
Talking about if you are planting stuff in Brooklyn,
right.
Soil reclamation, contamination, those types of issues, which are can be very serious.
Yeah.
And we're going to do an obituary to...
Bernard Rothside, architect, famous architect, Brooklyn and New York, passed in the last couple of weeks.
And also to Brooks McNamara, a theater historian who studied like minstrel shows and pageants and medicine men and all that.
One of your mentors, Patrick?
Yes, he was. Although I never got a very good grade in his class, probably because of that was pre-spell check, I think. So we are going to take a 30-second break and come back with Mark, Gabe, Ed, and
you?
And others.
Yes.
Ooh.
life. I wonder, will it take me under? I don't know. Imagine smoking weed in the street without cops harassing. Imagine going to court with no trial. Lifestyle cruising blue Bahama waters. No welfare supporters. More conscious of the way we raise our daughters. Days are shorter, nights are colder. Feeling like life is over. These snakes strike like a cobra. The world's hot, my son got knocked. Evidently, it's elementary. They want us all gone eventually. Trooping out of state for a plate. Knowledge, coaches cook without the garbage. We don't have the top dollars. Imagine everybody flashing. Fashion, designer clothes. Listen to click up with diamond rolls. The people's holding dough, no parole, no rubbers. Going raw, magic law with no undercovers. Just some thoughts for the mind. I take a glimpse into time. Watch the blimp read, the world is mine.
Ain't no cuisine my queen can't order. We can burn it up, do it on the camcorder. Let me hit it from the front till the gets shorter. The Harlem hang glider, hot flow provider.
So we're back at Roberta's Q report.
May 31st. Where is
2009?
Yeah, it's still May. 31 days in May, right?
Yep. Rent's due tomorrow for those of us who have to pay rent.
My birthday's coming up.
Nice.
Yeah, June, Gemini.
39?
I am. No.
Good.
43.
Also a prime number. Or no, 39's not prime. What am I talking about?
Yeah, so here we are. We're back with Patrick Martins.
Now, Gabe, have you noticed that people are like, they want to do good, and then the second someone is like, okay, we're going to do good in your area, people are like, whoa.
Slow down.
Yeah,
slow
like,
down.
Oh, I believe in, integration in the schools, and they're like, great, your school is now the model, and they're like, whoa.
Wait a minute. Yeah.
That's kind of what this
tends to happen
about.
More than it should, you know?
Yeah, you would think that, people would want to be the change that they talk about.
Everyone gets so excited about it, but then no one really wants to be the one to make that first leap.
Yeah, there's a big issue going on outside of, off the coast of Nantucket, Cape Cod. They want to put in a huge wind farm. Has the support of a lot of environmental groups, including the Natural Resources Defense Fund, I do believe it's called. Yeah, Robert F. Kennedy. Very involved, except
Council,
yes.
NRDC.
Yeah, and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is very against this wind farm.
Because it's going to ruin his view. Not in his backyard.
Not in his backyard. Exactly. Completely. It's going to ruin his
NIMBY.
NIMBY. And so that's what I was saying. It's like you get all these strange... You end up in bed with very strange people when it suddenly is in your backyard and puts you in contradictory stances. So.
I hear also the whole wind, to harness wind fuel. That guy Pickens keeps talking about it. Apparently, you need a big station to translate that into electricity. And everyone who believes in it is like, nope, I don't want that big, ugly station on my land.
On the con side of the people who cite that for the wind farms is that it doesn't really, for all the processing and it breaks down a lot for the maintenance and all that, that it doesn't, that's on the argument side of the con, that it doesn't necessarily generate a lot of power to begin with. But if it's there and we can harness it, why not? I mean, little is better than nothing, I say.
So what's going on with the Gowanus? This is a NIMBY is local. A big issue. What's going on with that?
Well, that's an even weirder one. Yeah. Everybody agrees it needs to be cleaned up.
It's been despoiled for over 100
it's
years.
It's just a nasty piece of water that runs up from the harbor up into between Park Slope and Carroll Gardens.
Let's just, Ed, let me, can you set that up for just to explain to people who don't know Brooklyn, where it is, what it is, and all that?
Yeah, it's in what used to be referred to as South Brooklyn. Like I said, between the neighborhoods of Carroll Gardens and Park Slope.
Running to essentially what's the East River?
It runs straight into the harbor. Yeah,
it's a little inlet into Brooklyn from the harbor. Yeah,
that was dredged for industry.
For industry, completely. Yeah. And people dumped in it for, at least 100 years.
At least 100 years, yeah.
Dumped what?
Heavy metals.
Everything.
PCPs.
Everything. Yeah. Also, bodies,
The Newtown Creek as well, or Newton Creek.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same.
Which is in Queens.
Same thing. Yeah. Queens.
But there's like less water flow, actually, in the Gowanus. 10 years ago, they opened up an old inlet, and it has helped drastically with the odor. I mean, 10, 15 years ago.
I mean, it's essentially an open sewer.
I mean, they're disgusting bodies of water. Both of them.
That's Brandon Hoy, who's with us, also going to come on for the next segment. But it's true. It is disgusting. Yep. The Gowanus is gross.
It's been against regulation since 1972, the Clean Water Act. The city's been dragging its feet for 30 years.
Just neglected that one because they thought it was just too far gone to even bother.
Right. And the the local people who have lived there their whole lives have wanted to have it cleaned up. Obviously, there's major health issues. I mean, just to give you an example, you know, the EPA usually measures things in parts per million or even parts per billion, you know, poisons. But in the Gowanus, they measure parts per hundreds of thousands or hundreds. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. Yeah. It's like,
it's crazy dirty.
It's crazy dirty. And there's people living there. I mean,
yeah. And now there are people living in buildings, gentrification,
right,
who weren't living there before. They've taken artists have entered buildings and fixed them up or bought them.
And here we come to the issue.
The great irony is,
this is why we chose NIMBY, is that there's the environment.
Well, they want to. The EPA now wants to.
Yeah, well, everybody wants to clean it up.
But there's two options.
There's two options.
Well, the federal government
has... There's a super fund, or there's the local polls, like Bill de Blasio and...
Scotto.
Buddy Scotto, he's a little more nuanced, I think.
So wait a second. Is it safe to say there's two strategies to clean the Gowanus? One is a federally sponsored program. And then, like, the mayor, he doesn't want that. He wants it to be done by the city.
No, he wants it to be done by Toll Brothers. Toll Brothers, the big building company, wants to put in 400 and something units along it. And so...
Residential units?
Residential,
like condos?
Build on a toxic site, essentially.
Yeah. You know, Toll Brothers, who are doing the Edge in Williamsburg... They want to do some sort of huge project down there, so Bloomberg is like private-public partnership. They don't want the title Superfund to taint the area.
Which he'll give it to them if they clean it up.
It's tainted.
Yeah,
essentially.
Essentially,
he'll issue the permits if they clean up the mess.
Exactly.
Well, and that's the question, what does cleanup mean? Now, Superfund, for those who don't know, is a federal program it's sort of like saying disaster area when you have a tornado. Superfund means that you will get federal funds from this particular fund to clean up this thing or help to clean it up. And it, because of such massive things, by the way, just to talk about scale, we talk about parts per hundreds. This is the largest oil spill, underground oil spill, in the country.
Yeah, that's up here. That's Newtown Creek.
Oh, that's Newtown?
Yeah, that's not Gowanus.
Largest.
Yeah.
I mean, by far.
Yeah. The PCPs in the Gowanus is also one of the most concentrated in certainly in the country. And so the Superfund designated, which is they've been fighting for 30 years, the EPA said, okay, we have the funds, we want to do it, new administration. In the meantime, of course, local people, the other avenue has been to develop it, saying, well, if there's interest in the land, people want to live here. It's sort of, you know, the irony being, it's going to be the Venice of Brooklyn, right? You know, the idea that you live on waterfront property, right?
Right. Venice is disgusting.
That's true. That's the other irony, of course, on top of it, right?
Yeah. No, somebody in the Times today, there's a little op-ed piece saying, you know, like Venice, but cleaner.
yeah, barely. Anyway, but that's the irony. So now you have people with property values and developers who want to develop this area. And of course, what bank is going to want to give money to a place that, you know, has been designated Superfund? So that's setting up the issue. We have about 30 seconds left right now.
It's so crazy because it's like the truth is the truth is the truth.
Well,
what is the method for cleaning this up?
Well, we'll come back and talk about that. But it's really a long-term, short-term. It's sort of like, is property value going to be, you know, better off if more people are living on a toxic site now or in 20 years when it's better cleaned up in a Superfund? That's the issue.
Well, we're going to come back to this issue. Of you know, the Gowanus Parkway. We're going to come on for one more segment, then we're going to talk about gardening, you know, which is the opposite
of reclamation.
Soil reclamation, that is in my backyard.
Yes.
No, not in my backyard.
Yes.
And then we're going to come back with our final guest, Jake Beasley. Thank you.
dollar bill inside a paladin's hand. And nobody's sure where Mr. Knickerbocker's at.
What's up with Roberta's storing all their chairs in our shipping containers? Damn, not in our backyard, damn it.
Yeah, but today we're using them, man. We got a lot of butts to seat. So.
No,
we
I'm do.
We have a party in here with all these chairs, man.
We do. We have a full container today.
Yeah,
full container.
Yeah, we're completely full. So, NIMBY, where are we? How the hell are they going to ever clean up the Gowanus? And well, are the two strategies any different? Yeah.
Well, let's talk about... We can't go into probably too much detail, but we can talk about what the proposals are.
Well, it's going to be a dredging thing, just like what's going on with they finally are starting at with the Hudson, cleaning up all the PCBs.
Use that as an example.
Yeah. So they dredge it? They just take all the water out?
Well, no. It's the sediments.
Basically, what happens is the heavy metals, as their designation, heavy, they fall to the bottom, and they kind of sit there. And so the idea is to dig them out in such a way that doesn't stir them up or bring them downstream. And so now that they're settled, that's a good thing. They can dig them out. The problem is, of course, they got to bring them someplace.
New Mexico, dude.
Exactly. Someplace else to dump it. And then secondly, what they do in both plans is cap it, meaning they put a big layer of something over it so that basically that layer doesn't really go away. It's contaminated forever.
So like they're cementing it in?
Yes, basically.
Well, that was my question, because the idea of it's so contaminated, so notoriously dirty, how... What's the timeline if Toll Brothers were to take on this project of cleaning it so they could build on it? What's the timeline of how long it would take to be livable land?
I think, you know, they've had experts talking about it back and forth, but I think it's containable in time scale. I think it would probably be a year or two because it's not a flowing body of water. It's pretty much standing water. It's not that big, relatively speaking.
And it's mostly heavy metal contamination, not necessarily chemical contamination.
Yeah, it's both. It's both, but it's stuff in the sediment that they're most worried about.
And they're also worried about, also, there's buildings on the land on the shore. So they can't, I mean, if they really were going to do it right, they'd have to take all the buildings. Because for people who are unfamiliar with the area, what used to be...
Oh, the soil all around.
Yeah. What used to be on there, as an example, just from Carroll Gardens up... Cement factories.
There's that whole brownfield site right on Smith and Ninth.
Yeah, refineries, you know? People who make, you know, all those things. So it was just purely industrial. And it was an industrial region. As many of Brooklyn, as you guys here sitting in Roberta's, this was also an industrial area. People are starting to reclaim the land. And now that this is where these issues are coming on, similar to what New Jersey is dealing with now in the sense that, that's an industrial area and it's zoned as such so that people aren't raising their kids over, you know, heavy metals and PCBs.
Noticed that, guys, here in Bushwick? Like, the new gentrification is causing problems with a pretty much, business area? These are like loading docks and stuff.
I haven't noticed too much of it, but I mean, you know, there's Superfund, like, areas all over this.
Really?
Like, right around the corner.
Well, really? You know, I mean, they're disaster sites. Yeah. They haven't been...
They haven't been officially designated,
Exactly, but, you know... nobody's using them because they know what it would go through to have to get it cleaned up.
Yeah, but that's the norm. That's the norm.
But there's also a lot of misunderstanding out there also. One of the comments during the last EPA city hearing for the Gowanus was a longtime local resident complaining about the artists in one of the building because they use cadmium paint. And they're the ones who put the heavy metals there, which... there's cadmium and cadmium red, but that's not what contaminated that site.
Such a small amount. Right. It's not unnoticeable.
It's not like land.
No. But the paint factory that was there 50 years ago.
Exactly.
But it's
that's
like, you know, but there's that tension. It's just like, it's, you know, you ruined my neighborhood or, you know.
Right. I mean, it's scale.
Of course.
I mean, the residents are very much, you know, there's a lot of fighting because, of course, the people who are already invested in the area have property values that they're afraid they're going to fall, which they will, of course. But the question really is long-term, short-term. So in 20 years, when they're ready to sell, if it's done properly, or at least with the best effort made put forth by the feds who have the most money to do so.
So you're saying the feds would do it better than Toll House?
Given the two, I mean...
Toll Brothers.
The Toll House brothers.
I think Toll House
the
would
tree.
Do it.
Yeah.
Toll House, those little munchkins.
The Toll Brothers development, what's their incentive? Clean it up as fast as they can, build as fast as they can, sell it as fast
but
as they can.
But then again, stuff could bottom out again, and then they're not going to do it, and it sits there, and you have no guarantee that it'll be finished.
Exactly.
Bottom out, we're already at the... I mean, you know, bottom out. out. We're here. I don't know how far back you know up we're
supposedly
going.
It's leveled off and it's going to get better. That's what they're talking about. Atlanta yards all of it. So it's but
we should have a drinking. Where we all drink from the Gowanus.
No,
and our sickness will cause change.
Have you ever been over? Just to give you an idea, the police divers of New York City.
They won't go in?
They can't go in. Oh, like, they literally get illnesses. They have to have special suits. So that just gives you, you know, when they have to fish out cars that have been dumped there or guns or bodies, they have to get them out and they have to have special suits because if there's a leak in their suit, they literally get chemical burns from where the stuff leaks in.
That's why I'm curious about the timeline. Like, that's really contaminated.
No, yeah. I don't even know if it's water anymore.
You can't even touch the water without getting sick.
Right, but I think, okay, remember 10 years ago they opened up the inlet on the closed-off side. Yes. And that really cut down on the smell. I used to ride my bike over, I think it was the Union Street Bridge. Before they did that, it was one of the most putrid things in the summer you could imagine. Oh, yeah. And the fresh water has made it palatable. But even opening that vent for fresh water, everybody was scared because it was going to get the sediments flowing again. You know, so it's like it's a huge thing.
So, Gabe, tell us if you can. We're interested also. I know you can't speak to it directly, but your position in the public advocate's office and the mayor's position is sort of odd on this, that, you know, he's basically, he doesn't want to, they don't want to, he's on the side of
not. He wants to keep it privately owned. Funded.
Yeah, not designated to the Superfund site because of what that implication will mean.
Because he wants to use that money elsewhere, probably.
Yeah.
So is it the job of the public advocate to change that? Or, I mean, does she relate with this at all? Like, does she push that button or not really?
That's not a button she pushes necessarily.
Explain the role of the public advocates in general. Actually, we're gonna come back in 30 seconds. We'll come back to that.
And then we're gonna talk about also gardening and soil.
Yeah, and soil.
Yeah, urban. Small scale soil reclamation.
Yes.
Cool. Sorry.
Okay, we're coming back to the Q Report. I'm Mark Marabella here with Patrick Martins and
Ed Grant.
Ed, I have to say, I haven't mentioned it before, but the fresh paint on your arm looks beautiful. It's really coming
together.
Getting
some more color. I think I've won maybe two more sessions.
I thought that was the effect of you driving over the Gowanus.
No.
On your bike.
The right arm will be done, and then, you know, depending on my employment situation, the left will start.
It's gorgeous.
Good for you.
By the way, folks who don't have television attached to their we don't have the webcam up yet.
Thank God.
We're commenting on Ed's beautiful tattoo sleeve on his right arm, which is gorgeous, very colorful. We are coming back talking about the Gowanus not in my backyard, which is sort of the opposite. Now it is in their backyard, but they don't want to call it as such. But we're gonna expand the conversation now into more of a local and even a smaller realm of urban gardening and soil reclamation. Everybody wants to urban garden, thinks it's a good idea. We have Brandon Hoy here from Roberta's, who's been on before, and we've talked about his gardens. And one of the major things we want to get into a little bit more specificity about the soil, which is always an issue, especially if you're trying to eat from it, not just plant flowers and trees. And so, Brandon, talk a little bit about the process, what you had to do with the soil, and what you guys found. Did you do tests? I know you're not directly planting into the area where you are because this is an industrial place, but you've made beds, but you still had to get the soil.
We started from the beginning. We had some loam dirt, which just had sand and clay, and then we added more nutrient dirt. And then the Lower East Side Ecology Center had some worm castings. We put that in. We put peat moss, perlite, and vermiculite to help water retention.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just kind of tested with a few things here and there. This bed I've had for 3 years. And this bed, I just keep turning all the organic matter right back into.
He's pointing into a bed that's on the ground outside of our studio.
This was the first bed we had here.
So is that also from soil that you brought? Was that natural, the soil that was here? Or
no, we bought that soil as okay. well.
Same place from Vito?
No, Vito, no go. Yeah. Vito came here with a gun on the side of his truck. We should have known immediately not to buy soil from that guy.
Oh, my God. Well, tell us.
We sent it away to Cornell. There's no problems with the soil. It just lacks any nutrients at all.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. Yeah. That's interesting, yeah.
I mean, it's level.
For people, just a little primer, for people who don't know how soil is created, tell us a little bit about how that works. Like, it ain't just dirt. Soil is different than dirt.
Mark.
Tell us.
God made everything. I'm telling you that.
Yes.
There's a number of things that happen. You know, things start to break down. That's what creates soil. Right, creates nutrients. Yeah. So, bacteria. Yeah, leaves fall.
Soil is very alive.
Yeah. Of course. And then there's animals that...
Oh, yeah. Worms. I mean, just the worms you said you brought in.
Yeah,
very important.
The worms are really important, I think, to this garden. What keeps the nutrients flowing is the fact that there's the worms there and they're eating
and
the organic matter.
Yeah.
I mean, they just travel along and they pass nutrients out through them.
They also till it, sort of.
They do. Yeah, they're aerating. Yeah. And mm-hmm. But our original problems...
Worms? Like how many worms?
I started with 5 pounds of worms in an under-the-sink vermiculture composting. And
nice.
Those worms just keep... having more worms, and as worms start to crawl up the side, I just take them out and I put them in a bed.
Excellent.
So they go into soil and then they do their job elsewhere. Yep. I mean, the worms at Central, our other garden, are the size of like garden snakes. They're huge. Yeah. I can't even imagine the amount of nutrients
also that you planted.
They're raised beds as well. Well, they're on the ground, but we laid down tarp and then we laid down drainage. I mean, we really wanted to separate ourselves from what was underneath us, was years of dumping.
Yeah. Yeah. What would you recommend though? Say, you know, I just scored a great little garden apartment and my landlords are like, yeah, clean up the backyard. You can do what you want. And you suddenly want to plant
something.
I'm
all for it. I mean, you can send away and get your soil tested and find out. I mean,
where do you do that?
MIT does it. I mean, any college does it. If you can find a college kid that you know that's in that department, they'll probably do it for you. There's plenty of ways to get
it. But it's important. Were you nervous? That'd be your first step, right?
Were you nervous, like when you go to the doctor, like what the report would be back about the soil?
It's positive.
You're like, positive. Is that good?
Oh man, what does that mean?
Also,
we knew what we had with that first soil. Now that we're mixing nutrients in with it, it's fine. It's the bed that we isolated with just one soil is obviously the best bed. It has great soil in it. It's really nutrient. We haven't added anything to it, and things seem to be growing fine.
So I know people that in their backyards, they've run into they haven't had anything tested for chemicals, but have run into large macro sharp things. I like some people, a lot of glass, paraphernalia. A friend of mine sliced a tendon in her thumb and had to have it surgically repaired when she was digging just for flowers.
Well, Central, our original idea at Central was we wanted to get back in the earth. So we were thinking, man, they farmed on this years ago.
Right.
We can come back and we can do this.
Right.
And so we started digging and it was disgusting. We had crack vials and baby diapers, and I mean, just like you said, there's glass and pieces of metal and pipes. I mean, anything you can think that somebody would throw away, they'll just throw it in their backyard and bury it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Batteries. It's It's funny. One of the things, I mean, the not in my backyard thing I was thinking about farms is a lot of times, like, someone will be like, oh, we want more farmland. So a farm opens up and they're like, it's smelly. Close the farm. Right. You know, has there been any resistance at all by your landlords or by any type of authority figure?
I mean, neighbors? We're not raising livestock.
No, we're not. And there's not a lot of smell. I mean, even with our composting, it's not.
Well,
it's not
actually
very smelly.
Composting, if it's done right, doesn't smell.
I mean, the vermiculture is really easy. I mean, that under
explain
the sink,
what that is.
I mean, it's worm. All you're doing is you're pretty much feeding your organic matter, organic waste that you're
the stuff
creating.
From your plate. Your
yeah, you don't want any. You don't want any
leftover,
fats or
no fats.
No, you don't want to like cheese or meats or stuff like that. But all your vegetable waste,
vegetable scraps,
just throw it in. They'll eat that. They turn it into worm castings. You can take that and use it for fertilizer. It's great in your soil. It's also, I'd more than take that away, I usually just take bunches of worms and put them in the beds of whatever I'm growing.
Yeah. Mm.
When's great. The first edible product available at Roberta's? Like, if
it already
fans.
Is. It really? Yeah. 3 days ago. We're already harvesting arugula and mescaline greens. Oh. At Central, we have Russian red kale. Thank you very much. You do.
I mean, even if you get it from a good organic farm, it's still not as good as something you pick immediately.
I mean, it came here and it was on the menu within 10 minutes. I had the biggest smile that day. It was
so
great.
Phenomenal.
I mean, really, we want to push this to about 30% this year. I think we can get it to there. And already, I'm just like, wow, these things are going crazy. There's so many veggies over there.
Is it
going
to be part of a farmer's market I read about in the diner's table?
I mean, that's always been something that we've talked about. And whether or not we can actually produce enough to do a farmer's market, well, it's yet to be known, because this is the first time that we've done this.
Interesting. I mean, we could maybe buy retail here, too.
I mean, we sell like the bread retail and stuff,
your breads are amazing.
And I like your guys' cart ideas, which kind of spans the Roberta's tentacles even further into the community. But I wanted to say congratulations on your tasting table and Diner's Journal and 25 and under re-review.
Do I get a clap for that, please?
Yes.
Oh,
fierce,
man.
Fierce.
That's actually fierce, the second plug this hour, man, you've gotten. So it's just
he wasn't here for the first one.
No, but it's pretty, it's pretty great reading about yourself in the Times, huh?
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah.
Are we coming up on the next?
Yeah, I think we need to take a 30-second break.
We're going
to
come up and have Jake Beasley.
That's exciting.
Back. Yeah. Media advocacy.
Well, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, man.
Hey, we're back here at the Q Reports. We've just been left by Brandon and Gabe. We're joined now by Jake Beasley from Good Corporate Citizen, media advocate, and he's got a really interesting program he's doing. We're back here with Patrick Martins, Ed Grant, and Mark Mabella, and myself. So, Jake, thanks for being here today on such short notice.
Thanks for having me.
Great. So, tell us, first of all, tell us what the program that you're doing. This, as you know, this hour is about Not in My Backyard, and which has a lot to do about hypocrisy, and you're somebody who sort of didn't wait around for somebody else to do it. You're somebody who did not, you know, is sort of walking the walk, talking the talk, and walking the walk. Tell us about the program in the Bronx that you're involved in.
Yeah, so my partner, a good corporate citizen, James Hirsch, and I, we go up to a school called H.O. Rucker High up in the South Bronx. We go up there once a week, and we teach a documentary filmmaking class to kids. It's actually not a class; it's an after-school program, which sort of, I guess that kind of directly relates to the Not in My Backyard thing, because at the moment there's a real dearth of after-school programs pretty much everywhere, and especially in you know, high socioeconomic need schools. So to give you a little backstory, I was inspired by a teacher there, a young teacher named Ryan Glass, who he called me one day and he said, "I'm starting a drum line at school." There were no after-school programs at Rucker, to my knowledge, when he started that. He had never played the drums a day in his life. He just knew that that's what would speak to the kids, as they really had no creative outlet at the time. And so I went and visited his drum line. We shot a little bit footage. We played around with it and just bounced ideas around. And I realized, you know, one thing that kids might really be struck by is cameras.
A drum line is the traditional, like, orchestra that plays, like, at a football game or something.
That's it. It's just
marching
it's,
band.
It's a marching band.
Where was Ryan Glass from? I mean, he was, like, an older guy who had been doing this for a while. He's, like, kind of a mentor figure for you, wasn't he?
In a sense, although he's younger than I am.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
That's cool, too.
DIY.
Yeah, right. He actually came from the video production world. I used to work for his interactive production company, so That's how we met. And he got a calling to be a teacher. Literally, he kind of woke up one day, and we talked about it, talked about life and what we wanted to give back, and that's what he decided he wanted to do. So he teaches algebra there now.
Okay. But that's pretty interesting. And tell us, I was really interested too. Why cameras? I think it's really important for people. I did a turn as an English teacher as well in high schools, and basically English, teaching English, what is it about? It's about teaching people how to communicate and understand how other people communicate, and likewise, media is a language and really should be taught. As a matter of fact, it's probably the thing that people and kids learn first and most, and it's strange to me that I've been a big advocate for a long time that it's not in the schools, that it seems to be like an extracurricular thing, that they should know the language to tell their own stories. Tell us how you developed that and how that's working. Go ahead.
Well, it was just what I had to give, I think. And to address what you said about why is it they don't teach this stuff, I think one reason is because the teachers don't understand it.
Oh, I have to agree with you completely.
That's great. It's so great.
We are a generation, the second generation maybe, that was completely raised on television.
That's what I'm saying. It's been third or fourth now.
People don't know it. And it's one thing about my behalf, being in art school, you learn it. You learn how to read imagery. You know,
it's a language.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't. And they just think, oh, it's TV, it's everywhere. And because they don't know, they're being manipulated.
Right.
Heavily.
That's the point. So it's fine to be manipulated as long as you're aware of it.
So basically, from the where you were talking about the story, and then I actually interrupted, but you were talking about Ryan Glass to Drumline, and then how did Drumline then lead to the documentary idea, and how did you convince the principal of the school to allow you to come in and kind of like extend their education system a bit?
Yeah. The drumline idea, it transitioned into a media or more of a visual media idea because of Ryan's video background and because I visited him. And I didn't shoot the footage for that, but we just talked so much about creating a video piece for the drumline to inspire people to get involved with it, to come see the shows, and really to help the school raise awareness to get some funding for some more after-school programs.
Perfect example of filling in where people say, well, we need more money, we need more this, we need more that, and you filled in. How have the kids been responding?
I mean, what tools do they use? I mean, they use cameras, recorders, like how high-tech is it?
It's high tech. It's according to the rest of the teachers there, it's super high tech, but it's really not at all. I mean, you see these little flip cameras people are walking around with, and they're cheap, right? They're just a couple of $100,
right.
And now they make them to shoot HD, and the sound, the microphone ain't that bad. You could easily sit down and shoot an interview with somebody, and people do it all the time. So that's what we're using now. In terms of getting the funding to buy a whole, you know, a slew of these cameras and hard drives and laptops, and so that they can shoot their own documentaries, that's been a little bit of a challenge. The school's been really helpful in the ways they can be. We just had a little fundraiser last week through a party, and we shot some interviews of the kids to introduce them to everybody who attended. And these kids, to answer your question a while back, their response has been unbelievable. I was a little worried how they would react to just being put on camera and to being given a tool that requires some maturity to use. But I think they're ready for it. And one of the reasons is because they grew up with these little tools, and they're used to them. It takes no time for them to learn how to use this flip camera, and they could easily use something a lot more complicated if we had the money to give it to them.
So what's been the most surprising thing or story that the kids have surprised you about that you thought you were, you know, just a surprise that came out of them that you weren't aware of to begin with?
Oh, man. They surprise me every
week.
Any
Oscars?
there are some kids. There are some kids there, actually, who are really, really, really talented. And who, if they're given the right tools and the right opportunity, they're going to be professionals at a really young age.
That's great.
Well, we're about to take a break, but I've always thought that, places like... the Middle East and wherever there's real trouble, I've always thought YMCAs and after-school programs and soccer fields and basketball courts, you know, has an unbelievable effect on a community level,
And citizen journalism.
Citizen journalism as well. Well, we will come back with Jake Beasley after this short break.
Great. Okay, we're back on the Q Report. I'm Mark Morabella.
I'm Patrick Mark. We need to go in alphabetical order. You go, Ed.
Okay, I'm Ed Grant.
Patrick Martins.
Mark Morabella. Am I? Yeah, no, Martins. Yeah, I guess I'm
Next. Are we going by first name? Let's go by middle name. Aaron. My middle name is Aaron.
Wow, really?
No.
Is it really? Mine's Gerard. I don't know if that's worse, but we're back here with Jake Beasley. What's your middle name, Jake?
Jacobs.
Jake Jacobs?
Ooh,
all right.
No big deal, really.
That's pretty cool, actually.
It'd be great if it was Jacobson.
So we're talking to Jake Beasley about the program he's running in. I'm sorry, the school again, Jake, is?
H.L. Rucker High.
What's the name of the program exactly? Is there a name of it?
Let's come up with one right now.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah. Is this a pilot program that...
Very much so.
Hopefully this can be copied in the system. We're interested to know, we're talking off mic, we're interested to know in some specific projects that you were sort of surprised by, and sort of tell us the topics that they're covering, in their own voices.
Yeah. Man, okay, a couple of my favorites. One young guy named Jamel, he's an incredible kid. He's from the South Bronx. He's never lived anywhere else, and he's being shipped down to Miami by his parents because his neighborhood's just not safe enough for him to get to and from school every day or really do anything else. But he's one of these talents I just referred to earlier, and we sent them out in the hallways with a camera to just do an interview, just as a class exercise. And he came back with this footage of an interview he performed with another young guy who is just recently been put in foster care. And
the respect that Jamel showed Radamus, which is his name, the respect that he showed him and the insight that he was able to draw out and the comfort level he was able to create in the hallway of a busy school was astounding. And there's a video of that. It'll be up on our website soon. But we just showed that at the fundraiser, and that was really powerful for everybody to see.
It's goodcorpmedia.com. Is that the...
Yeah, you can type in goodcorpmedia or actually just goodcorpcitizen.com.
So this is the website is one of your outlets that you'll be promoting. So people can see these videos,
and so people can make a donation.
Yeah, it really is just it's really a way for people to come. There are some clips of the kids on there right now. You can actually just see little segments of them and get to know who they are. And you can click and donate on PayPal.
What is the main theme? Is there fiction, nonfiction? Is it mainly interview journalism based? I mean, do they get to, if someone has a passion, do you let them experiment or do theater?
Never.
Never?
Never. Well, I mean, we've only been doing this for a few months. And at this point, it's just documentary filmmaking and, you know, photojournalism. That's what we're doing now. I was just thinking earlier, I was talking to Mark earlier on the phone about just creating awareness about the media these kids are bombarded, creating awareness in them and helping them just sort of know what they're experiencing and engaging. Mm-hmm. And I thought, man, I'd love to shoot a class and have these kids shoot their own commercials just so they can learn, you know, what it is that's being shot at them. But for now, documentaries.
But this is also giving them a voice, too. And especially a community that's, you know,
underserved.
Underserved, disempowered. That's right.
Underrepresented.
You know? Yeah.
That's right.
Jake, what's been the response, sort of the word of mouth, probably the buzz in the school? You probably have only limited openings. I'm sure everybody wants to join in, or has it been limited?
The kids it's been really difficult because we've had to turn kids away.
Right, I would imagine. So how many kids do you have in the program now?
We've got, depending on the week, 12 to 15.
Mm-hmm. Are they all shooting, and are there some who are specialized in like editing and shooting, you know, working as a production or like their own stories, or how is it working like a film school?
Well, it is. I mean, at this point, we still don't have all the cameras we need. Mm-hmm. We're walking around with really limited equipment. We don't have any hard drives or editing equipment for them yet. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're doing right now, is trying to get the money to do that. In the meantime, we've just got a few cameras we're walking around with, and we're having them shoot their own stories, perform their own interviews, and sort of some of it is about the world around them, and some of it's about looking at their own lives and what's going on just in their own little sort of space.
I was really taken by the one kid who talked about Grizzly Man, who I can say a lot about Grizzly Man, but he was kind of, he had the same reaction I did when I saw it, which is like, this guy didn't realize you can't feed the bears. I mean, you know, it was like, I was sort of like, you know, the whole documentary about Discovery, you know, on Discovery that everybody raved about, I was like, oh, please.
Oh, come on, it was great.
Yeah, I know, he's a big...
I'm a big Herzog fan.
Why didn't they show the mauling? Why did they have to cut that out?
Because we can hear about him talking.
Really? It's on YouTube.
There
nice.
You go. Everybody go and be disgusted.
I also kind of want to see that guy get killed by the stingray. I mean, I don't really want to.
So, Jake, just to finish up, we wanted to ask you about Good Corporate Citizen, how you sort of came to this, and what you guys are about, what you guys are doing in your company.
Yeah. Well, James, our mission statement is actually, like you guys said, it's to serve the underserved, which sort of translates to not-for-profits, artists, agents of change, like, you know, we have a wind energy company we're working with now, and anybody who's just trying to do something different. That proves difficult in a lot of ways, in that budgets tend to be smaller, and we do need to, you know, be able to eat and sleep. But we're finding that people are really responsive, and that there's a lot of work out there for that. So I'd encourage other people to try to go out there.
I was actually very surprised, pleasantly, that your site had a lot of work, you know, that you guys have done a lot of work and advocacy work, and not only advocacy work, commercial work. I would say that people, you know, if I'm an organization like an HBO who you've done work for, or somebody like that, a gigantic corporation who... I'm going to feel better about, I'm going to hire these guys, you know, to do my site, to do my marketing for huge things like Curb Your Enthusiasm and The Office, and on DVD for The Office in England, which is the biggest selling DVD of all time. So I think that's really, really, really good. Hopefully it'll spin off for you.
And I have to say, that this is a nice example of enlightened self-interest, or, you know, the libertarian invisible hand, all, you know, governments don't do anything.
Quiet hypocrisy.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I like it. No, it's true. I like it. Tactics. versus strategies.
Yes.
You know, you can be technical, guerrilla-esque, and do a lot of good. And I did want to ask you, talking about that, helping other guerrillas out there who look onto our website and want to learn more, what was the single biggest hurdle in terms of convincing the school to allow you to do it? Is it a letter to the principal? If someone wants to do what you do in Cleveland, how do you make that first connection?
School better look good. You know, it better look good for the school, whatever we shoot.
So it's a good,
and it may not.
So it's a good. It gets the school school out there as being you know, some sort of PR for them.
Yeah, exactly. Part of the media of them themselves too.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we had to negotiate a lot on that, and what we arrived at is that we are going to we're going to cut a couple of pieces together, and one's going to be just a marketing tool for them, one's going to be, because we encourage honesty and openness with the kids, and we haven't told them any of this. So there will be the cut that's actually this their true cut, and there'll be the cut that the school can do whatever they want with.
That's excellent. And you might have a lot of work
assembly to go to.
And you might have a lot of work in California soon, because they're slashing the budgets to needy schools out there. They have no choice, because the voters said, "Oh no, I don't want to raise taxes to pay for poor kids' schools." So
what do they need guitars for?
Huh?
What do they need guitars
exactly? For? Guitars, cameras, whatever. Cameras. Learn how to read, you know. Hey. Right.
Well, thanks so much for coming in. It was very, very enlightening, and hopefully you can be on as a guest. I don't know if you're allowed to bring your students, but that would be interesting too. Yeah,
we would love to have you be a friend of the show. Come back again, Jake.
I'd love to. Thanks, guys.
We will be right back for the conclusion.
We are coming up on some obituaries, some shout-outs this week for Bernard Rothside, architect of Brooklyn, and who else, Patrick?
Brooks McNamara. So we'll come right back.
What if your
ventures? The smart money's on Harlem, and the moon is in the street, and the shadow boys are breaking all the laws. And you're east of East St. Louis, and the wind is making speeches, and the rain sounds like a round of applause. And Napoleon is weeping. Carnival saloon. His invisible fiance's in the mirror. And the band is going home. It's raining hammers, it's raining nails. It's true, there's nothing left for him down here. And it's time, time, time. And it's time, time, time. It's time, time, time that you love. And it's time, time, time. And they all pretend they're orphans, and their memory's like a train. You can see it getting smaller as it pulls away.
Here we are back to the Quotidian Report.
It's been quite a show.
It's been pretty
lively.
Yeah, it's been very lively and very unscripted. This was our most unscripted week ever.
Yeah,
but it shows. You
know, I
we don't need producers.
Well, yes, we do.
Just
but
kidding.
We do need producers. I am the vice chairman of the Producers Guild, so I can't. That's not really a position that I can advocate. And you know, Jake I know Jake because he is as a producer in the Producers Guild, so that's why. And
no,
Jake
I'm
does
sorry. I will never say that again. And the ideas of me do not reflect the ideas of the station.
We'll talk off air, Patrick.
So I was going to say, though, unscripted or not, you know, I did reach out to a couple of the pro Superfund Gowanus people, you know, the best I could, you know, the internet, their blogs. But I'm sorry to say that there wasn't any response. And I think they would have had a hugely receptive audience to get their message out there today.
Well, we'll revisit.
We'll revisit, of course. But, you know, the idea of silent hypocrisy, you know, it's just like it wasn't their gig, wasn't their video, you know. So,
yeah.
Well, I'd like to.
I'm easily angered, by the way.
You know, before we, you
in
know,
a good
we
way, had, I would say
it was a great show. Yeah, I mean, there was a lot. It was a positive show too, even though we were talking about NIMBY. Well, we want to do a couple of obits. One is Brooks McNamara. He was a theater historian. He passed away at 72 years old. He was a professor and a founder of the Performance Studies Department at New York University. And he was a master, you know, archivist. He actually started he organized the Schubert Archive.
Wow.
Which contained, like, I think 26,000, something like that, pieces of you know, information on popular entertainment, basically what Brooks like to call grassroots culture. And he loved popular and amateur entertainment, and even radio, television, motion pictures, and the internet. But really his foundation was minstrel shows, pageants, 19th century gathering spots known as concert saloons, which actually prefigured vaudeville. And he had a 1976 book called Step Right Up, and that was a history of medicine show and the film flamers who went down, you know, peddling snake oil. So very unusual genre. And of course, performance studies then got into identity crisis and Cabela dancing. And all of a sudden, like, he became estranged.
Step Right Up is still with us, of course, with all the you know, as seen on TV ads. You know, Vince is one of my favorite performers. You know, I can't do this all day.
Oh, Slap Chop guy?
Slap yeah. Chop, man. Yeah. He's my favorite.
Yeah, he is pretty hysterical, I have to say.
He's fantastic.
And my friend Daniel McKay actually told me of the passing, and he was very instrumental to Daniel's career, who's now, he's a professor at University of Oregon, and has written numerous books on role-playing. And actually, Dan writes me that it's been a very tough work, a tough year for him, because role-playing lost three titans in a 13-month period of time.
Dungeons and Dragons founders, man.
The two co-founders, Gary Sigak and Dave Arneson. Also, Eric Wujcik, the designer of the first diceless role-playing game and a real promoter of role-playing as performance art, died in June of 2008.
Okay.
Well, the art lives on in The Sims. Yeah. And Will Wright, who I just interviewed for one of our shows on National Geographic.
Oh, did you interview him because of Spore and the Life Show?
Exactly. Excellent. Yeah, Spore, who is, of course, the creator of The Sims, for those who don't know. Yeah.
I saw actually a group of role players out in the park, in Fort Greene Park the other day. Reminded me of Role Models, which I just saw, which I have to say was an absolutely hysterical movie.
Role Models. So
I love role-playing games.
Patrick, tell us a little about Professor McKay and your relationship to him and
how he fired you all up.
You knew him personally, performance studies.
He actually came to New York City from Wayne, right outside of Detroit, and I was always very fascinated because he brought with him a 25-pound book that he had created, and it was a role-playing game that he had created, and he created this whole world, and he talked about bloodlines and soil types and diets and economics, and, you know, he created a total world picture and made drawings to scale, you know, about you know, where the world was and this and that. And he actually organized a role-playing game, which he was trying to maintain is performance.
Yeah.
It follows the same rules as other art forms and therefore needs to be embraced as such. So I kind of felt he was truly, as an academic smart, you know, genius, he was honoring his basement buddies, you know, on the highest level of academics.
Yeah, and it's also turned into a science, too. Gaming studies, and it's proven to be an extremely, you know, good model for simulation.
That's the judge of brilliance when you look back and you say, of course it should have been that, right?
Name your two best storytellers ever. Homer, Tolkien, I mean, those are not factual.
Right.
I mean, they have elements of fact to them.
Well, there's a lot of fictional stories that are far more truthful than documentaries could be.
Now, there was a passing this week for you as well, Mark.
I did want to mention our director, speaking of the Producers Guild, our director on the East Coast, Mitzi Rothside, who is an alumnus, and she's a producer in her own right, coordinator, went to Cooper Union, very Brooklyn person. Her father, Bernard Rothside, was an architect, famous architect in Brooklyn, lived in Park Slope. He helped redesign one of the wings of the Brooklyn Methodist Hospital, one of our fine institutions here. Also, on his before his passing, unfortunately, he was also had drawn up designs for a hospital in Nigeria, and hopefully that project will continue. But he was a big local advocate in Brooklyn and a big institution, so he'll be greatly missed.
And I'd like to just say, you know, because I'll feel guilty if I don't, my stepfather's mother passed away 2 days ago, age 85, Carrie Parker. She was a wonderful, sweet woman. And it's a loss, but the time was right.
Good.
Well, on those happy notes, we will conclude a Not in My Backyard segment.
Yeah. Oh, and In Our Backyard next week, Bushwick Open Studios Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Ooh. So
let's make it an all art show.
Yeah, I love that idea.
We can do that, and people should come out, get some good pizza, look at some good art, stare at us through the window.
And yeah. Roberta's is just now opening the second phase of their outdoor gardens.
It's nonstop building here.
Yep. So if it's weather like this next weekend, man, make a Sunday of it. We hope to see you.
Yep. And call in.
All right. Thanks, guys. Great show.
Bye. I go by the name of Pharrell from the Neptunes. And I just want to let y'all know I'm your pusher.
The world is about to feel something that they never felt before. Come on. From ghetto to ghetto, the backyard to yard, I sell it with one whip, it's off the hard. I'm the neighborhood pusher, call me subwoofer, cause I pump bass like that jack on or off the track. I'm heavy cuz, ball to your father, you can duck to the Fetty Gov. Sorry my love, but I'm seeing through these eyes. Benz convoys with the wagon on the side, only big boys keep deuces on the ride. Who